Who we love affects how we live. Watch a loving mother, if you want an example of this. I don't think there are many women who wake up in the morning thinking, I'd love today to clear up sick, to change nappies, to have make-believe parties in the early hours of Saturday morning, or to learn endless facts about Premier League footballers. And yet, this is what many mothers spend their time doing. Why? Because they love their children. And this is what their children love to do. Loving someone will change how we live. And so in this passage, Jesus shows us that our actions reveal our hearts. Who we love affects how we live. If we love Jesus, if we trust him, we will love him and serve those who love him. Over the past few weeks, we've been following Jesus' teaching here towards the end of Matthew's gospel. He's been teaching his disciples what it will look like to live once he has returned to heaven. He's told them that there's going to be a long delay, but that he is going to return. He's told them that despite the long delay, they must be ready for his return. And tonight we'll see that when he returns, our actions in our lives will reveal our hearts towards him. And we'll look at these verses tonight under three headings. Jesus is the King, seated on the throne. Those who love Jesus will share his inheritance. And those who reject Jesus will be punished. So to our first point, note, Jesus is the King seated on the throne. That is, Jesus is the King seated on the throne. Did you notice how clear this is from these verses in Matthew? Verse 31, Jesus kicks off his teaching with the fact that he is the King. When the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, then he will sit on his glorious throne. Before him will be gathered all the nations. This language Jesus uses is straight from the prophet Daniel. He's the guy from Sunday school whom God rescued from those hungry lions. That Daniel. In chapter 7 of the book of Daniel, he sees this incredible vision of a character he calls a son of man. And in Daniel's vision, the son of man sits on the throne of heaven. And the clouds and the angels are around him. And he's given power to rule all things for all time, to be the judge of all. And here Jesus is saying, that vision that Daniel saw, that vision was of me. Jesus says, I am the Son of Man. I am the one who sits on the throne in heaven. I am ruling over all the nations. I am going to come back with unmistakable power. And when I do, I will sort out people from all the nations as simply as a shepherd can tell the difference between sheep and goats. I wonder what the average person in the street thinks if you ask them about Jesus. The Man City fans who you happen to stop might assume that you're just pronouncing one of their strikers' names wrong. Those caught up in the festive season might think of the doll laid on the center stage at their children's nativity school play. Others may simply draw a blank. How about you? If you're honest, what do you see in your mind when you think of Jesus? Perhaps it's one of those scenes surrounding a great miracle. The wonderful look of compassion on our Saviour's face as he heals the leper with a touch. Or maybe it's Good Friday that looms large in your mind. Jesus beaten, mocked and scorned, hanging from the cross. Or take note of how Jesus describes himself here in Matthew 25. Fix your mind on this vision. Jesus, the Son of Man, gloriously enthroned. Jesus is the King seated on the throne. He doesn't just say it once here. Again in verse 34, And then in verse 40, Jesus refers to himself simply as the King. He wants to make it plain here. At the end of this section of teaching, that although he's going away physically, and there will be a long delay before he returns, he is still the one who determines everyone's eternal future, because Jesus is the King who sits on the glorious heavenly throne. I believe that life-changing understanding of Jesus involves acknowledging this truth. Believing in Jesus and the Jesus of the Bible means recognizing that he is on the throne. We are not in charge. I am not in charge of my life. The politicians are not ultimately in charge, however recently they were elected. If we're going to follow Jesus, we must accept that Jesus is truly in charge. And when King Jesus returns, he's going to sort people from all the nations into just two distinct groups. Do you notice that in verse 32 and verse 33? All the nations. And he uses the picture of a shepherd sorting out sheep from goats. And as he says, in all his sorting, whenever Jesus speaks of sorting, there are only ever two groups. There is no middle ground. There are no shoats or geep mentioned. Everyone is either a sheep or a goat. And the first of these two groups receive a wonderful inheritance. Our second point tonight, those who love Jesus will share in his inheritance. And Christmas is a wonderful time of sharing, isn't it? And gift giving. We share food and time with one another. We share gifts, in many cases generous and elaborate gifts. But I hope you see that the joy of all the greatest Christmases there have ever been do not even begin to compare with the generous sharing that goes on here. Look at verse 34. Then the King, remember that's Jesus, will say to those on his right, "Come, you who are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world." King Jesus says, "Come, blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you." We've just looked at how clear it is in these verses of Matthew that Jesus is the King. So this kingdom is his. And yet, it is also the inheritance of all those whom he welcomes in. And also note that those who are welcomed in are blessed by God the Father. Jesus is the King. The kingdom is his inheritance from his Father. And yet he shares that inheritance with all those who love him. So if you are a follower of Jesus tonight, this is your future. This is your inheritance. If you love Jesus, you are an heir to an eternal, imperishable kingdom, the kingdom of Jesus. Those who love Jesus will share his inheritance. The obvious question then arises, doesn't it? What does it mean to love Jesus? And that is precisely what Jesus goes on to tell us next. "Come and enjoy this wonderful inheritance," Jesus says, "for," or because, in verse 35, "I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty and you gave me drink. I was a stranger and you welcomed me. I was naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me." Then the righteous will answer him, saying, "Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you? Or thirsty and give you drink? And when did we see you a stranger and welcome you, or naked and clothe you? And when did we see you sick or in prison and visit you?" And the King will answer them, "Truly, I say to you, as you did it to the least of these my brothers, you did it to me." What does it mean to love Jesus? Jesus says that when you love the least of his brothers, you are in fact loving him. If you love him, you will love his brothers. Who we love affects how we live. When you meet the needs of his brothers, you are in fact loving him. So So who are the brothers that Jesus is talking about? Who will we care for if we love Jesus? The brothers Jesus is talking about here are Christians. Christians individually and as the church collectively. Jesus is saying if we love him, it will be seen in how we love the church, in how we meet the needs of struggling, suffering Christians. Am I sure? Yes, because when Jesus talks about his brothers, or the least of these, elsewhere in Matthew, he is consistently talking about those who follow him. The clearest, but not the only example, probably comes in Matthew chapter 12, where Jesus says, "Who is my mother and who are my brothers?" And stretching out his hand towards his disciples, he said, "Here are my mother and my brothers. For whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and sister and mother." It's pretty clear, isn't it? Jesus' brothers are those who follow him, his disciples. And Jesus says here that if you love him, you will love his disciples. Those who love Jesus will share in his inheritance. Those who love Jesus will love his followers. Your love for someone overflows into actions. Actions that show that you love them. And show that you love those who they love and those that love them. My love for my wife Haley will overflow into actions that show that I love her. I might buy her a gift or take her to do something she'll enjoy. But not only that, I will also love those that she loves and those that love her. My mother-in-law, Mary, is a kind and generous host. But ultimately, if it were not for the fact that I love my wife, I don't think I'd choose to spend Christmas Day with her. Who we love affects how we live. And so it is if we love Jesus, Jesus says. Our love will flow out into loving those whom he loves. Those who love him, other Christians, the church. And that won't just mean having friends here at church or doing nice things with Christians. Loving will mean sacrifice. It will mean doing things that if we didn't love Jesus, we wouldn't do. Look at the things Jesus mentions here. None of it sounds like much fun, does it? Feeding the hungry, visiting the sick, caring for the prisoner. My years here at St. John's have taught me that there will be no shortage of people to help here. Even in wonderfully affluent Tunbridge Wells, there are brothers and sisters in Christ struggling to pay their bills, let alone buy a turkey. There are brothers and sisters sick in hospital. There are brothers and sisters alone in nursing homes. There are brothers and sisters who, despite having no visible symptoms, are broken in pieces on the inside. And Jesus says here that if you love him, you will love them. You will help them. And if you run out of Christians to help here in Tunbridge Wells, there are millions of them all around the world. And there are Christians in prison for following Jesus. There are Christians who are homeless and jobless and destitute. There are churches which have been bombed and destroyed by terrorism and war. And Jesus says here that if you love him, if you're going to share in his inheritance, then you'll respond to them in loving actions. Now, as with last week, it's important that we don't make a mistake. Let's not get it wrong. Jesus is not saying that we are saved by our works. The Bible is just so unbelievably clear on that. We are not saved by our works. We are saved by trusting Jesus. If we trust that he came to earth on our behalf, he lived the perfect life that God calls all of us to live. He took the dreadful punishment that we deserve. And we are saved by trusting love for this King Jesus. We are not saved by our works. But Jesus is just so clear here that our works, our love for the church, will be a sign that we are saved, that we do love and trust him. So don't get me wrong, this is not a call to pull our socks up. Those who are told that they've lived a life of serving Jesus, of loving those who love him, in verse 37, they're completely surprised. They don't say to Jesus, do they? They don't say to the king, yeah, of course we did all that stuff. We know we were trying to earn our way into heaven. We're really good. No, they say, what are you talking about? When did we do these things for you? And Jesus says their love for him was plainly seen because of all the things they have done for other Christians. Jesus shares his inheritance with those who love him, and we'll see who loves him by the way that they serve and love others who love him. This teaching of Jesus is wonderful news. There is a fantastic future for those who are ready when he returns. There's a fantastic future with King Jesus to be shared and enjoyed by all those who love him. But in this teaching, there is also a fearful warning. Finally tonight, those who reject Jesus will be punished. Those who reject Jesus will be punished. Half of these verses, roughly, are taken up with talking about this, so we cannot ignore it, however much we might want to. Verse 41. Then he will say to those on his left, depart from me into the eternal fire, prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry and you gave me no food. I was thirsty and you gave me no drink. I was a stranger and you did not welcome me. Naked and you did not clothe me. Sick and in prison and you did not visit me. Then they will answer, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or naked or sick or in prison and did not minister to you? And then he will answer them, saying, truly I say to you, as you did not do it to one of the least of these, you did not do it for me. And these will go away into eternal punishment, but the righteous into eternal life. Instead of a wonderful invitation to a fantastic inheritance, this second of the two groups receives a terrifying punishment. Depart from me, King Jesus says. And they're not just sent away to nothing. They're sent away to an eternal fire. They are sent away to the same destination as the devil and all those angels who rejected God along with him. Remember, from among all people, there are only two groups. There are only two destinations. And one of them is this awful destination. Why are some of them sent away? Why does this second group find punishment to be their destination? Because those who reject Jesus will be punished. So just as it was important to establish what loving Jesus means, let's make sure we know what it means to reject Jesus. Again, Jesus lists the same situations, the same opportunities to love and serve Christians. Again, Jesus says this group had a chance to show that they loved him, to show that their lives were changed by following Jesus, but they didn't. Instead of lives full of care and love for hurting, struggling Christians, Jesus says this second group lived lives where they ignored the struggling and suffering church. When Jesus says, you didn't care for me, they said, when did we have a chance? This group showed that they rejected Jesus by rejecting his church. Jesus has and always will so closely identify himself with his followers that what is done for them is done for him. What is done to them is done to him. And conversely, what is not done for them is not done for him. How we live shows our hearts. On the basis of how this second group have treated these brothers, these followers of Jesus, Jesus says, you have not loved them. You have rejected them. Because you have not loved me, he says. You have not loved me. You have rejected me. And so I will reject you. I will send you away. The Bible is clear here and over again that those who reject Jesus will be punished. Please heed this warning. Remember that if we love Jesus, if we trust him, we will love and serve those who follow him. If you're sitting here tonight as one unconcerned for suffering Christians, unconcerned by those who are struggling here at St. John's, or inactive with regards to the millions of suffering followers of Jesus all around the world, search your hearts. Because Jesus says here that this indifference is a sign you are rejecting Jesus himself. In which case, you are on a terrifying trajectory. Jesus says, instead of being welcomed into his wonderful kingdom, instead of receiving life everlasting, you will receive death and eternal judgment along with the devil himself. Please heed this warning. Come to Jesus. Trust in him. Accept his invitation to become a fellow heir, a child of God, a brother of Jesus. Because Jesus is the King seated on the throne. And those who love Jesus will share his inheritance. But those who reject Jesus will be punished.